Hi, I'm Susan Schoeffer, your certified divorce coach and custody ally. This module is courts. Well, you're in my sandbox. Over 20 years as a agency licensed private investigator, I can't tell you how many hours I've sat in the courtroom. Certified divorce coach, I've talked with many attorneys, many legal professionals, mental health professionals. I really know my way around the courtroom. And I can share with you how to gather evidence that you need for your big day in court, how to communicate with your attorneys, more importantly, how to behave in the courtroom. People tell me all the time how they are looking forward to their big day in court. This module will get you prepared for that day so that you can be your best self when you walk into the courtroom. Let's get started.
Most people have very limited court experience, and unless somebody is an attorney, a judge, private investigator, police officer, or criminal, they don't really have a lot of experience in the courtroom. And oftentimes I hear people talk about their day in court, oh, they can't wait to get in front of a judge. They can't wait to tell the judge their side. Well, it's not that easy. I want you to keep in mind something, though. When you go into the courtroom, this is your big day. Your big day to get it right or wrong. If you are lucky that you make a settlement prior to going to court and everything is mapped out and all you need to do is stand in front of a judge and have the judge go through the checklist of your settlement and you say yay and your ex-husband or ex-wife says yay and you walk out, fantastic, wonderful. That doesn't always work that way. If you have anything that you are arguing about back and forth, the judge may ultimately make a decision, so you want to make sure you dot all your I's and cross your T's. Of course, you will have your attorney on your side fighting for you tooth and claw. More importantly, they are your support system as far as the legal part of the settlement goes, and they can speak to the judge in legalese. And we will talk about that in a few moments. But I want to start with the courts themselves. So you understand this. A lot of times clients will say to me, well, if she keeps doing this, she's going to get locked up. So let's talk a little bit about the court system. And so we understand that we are dealing with civil court, not criminal court, unless it becomes a criminal issue. And let me rewind to discussing what type of court you are going to be in. Each jurisdiction throughout the United States and, of course, outside of the United States have different types of arrangements. Some have superior courts, some have supreme courts, some have district courts, some have circuit courts, some have municipal courts, some have all of them. So today I just want to talk about higher, lower court, as well as civil criminal court. Divorce court is part of civil court. Matrimonial divorce court is sometimes used interchangeably. That is civil court. That is not criminal court. Criminal court is where criminals go. Criminal court is where criminal cases are tried. You are not going to criminal court. This, to dissolve a marriage, you go to civil court. And civil court is about preponderance of the evidence. I've talked about evidence extensively in the retaliation module, and I want to talk about it today. And that's because it's so incredibly important. If you have any contention in your divorce and you are making any cases for the judge and you have evidence, evidence means proof. Let me say that again. Evidence means proof. That means you have texts that your spouse sent you that are unsavory or even threatening. You have emails, Instagrams, they posted things on social media that you find disparaging that can make your case or break their case, so to speak. Or just not even so much to make or break a case, but to have credibility on your side, or more importantly, to support what you are saying. You can't stand in front of a judge and tell them that your spouse has sent you the most threatening emails and not have those emails there. You can't tell a judge that your spouse's girlfriend posted horrible things about you on Facebook without the Facebook evidence to prove what you are saying is true. Now, you may think, well, this is the most reasonable thing. Why is Susan wasting my time telling me this? Of course I know that. Well, let me tell you why. I can't tell you how many times I've been in court, and I've been in the court for thousands of hours. I am always surprised how people go to court without evidence. They stand in front of a judge, well-meaning, intelligent, professional people, and they make a claim, and they can't support it with documentation. What good is it? It means nothing. Judges have to rule on fact, and fact has to equal evidence. They just don't go on a whim. Can you imagine? Can you imagine telling somebody, well, they threatened me, and the judge goes, okay, I believe that. Yep, you threatened her, we're done. Case closed. It doesn't work that way. You have to have evidence. And how tragic would it be for you to have so much in your arsenal, so much proof that something has happened to you and not come to court prepared? This is something I know your attorney will do for you. I know your attorney will encourage you to bring evidence. I want to talk a little bit more about what that evidence is. Organize your evidence. Make a hanging folder. Make one that says emails, one that are texts, one that are Instagram, one that is Facebook, and then put the supporting documentation in those folders. If you need any type of supporting documentation of doctor's visits for you and or your children, therapist visits, that they go to camp, if you're that they have other activities, anything that you may need payment for and that you have to have proof that that exists, you must bring it. If you claim that your ex has or your soon-to-be ex has done anything that is interfering with the children's ability to do well at school, what way can you support that claim? Well, you show a report card. Before the divorce, they had fabulous grades. Now you're going through the divorce and their grades are slipping. Anything short of that, the judge just doesn't want to hear it. They can't make a ruling based on assumptions. They can't make a ruling on things that you say just because you say them. They have to have evidence. And keep in mind, you wouldn't want your spouse to come into the courtroom and make claims against you without an ounce of evidence to then have the judge make a decision that you have to live with for the rest of your life. So please bring the evidence. If you don't have hard evidence, which means you have to tell the judge that your ex was stalking you and that every morning you get up and their car is sitting in front of your house at 6 a.m. and it shouldn't be, take a picture and make sure you bring that to court. Anything you may claim to, you have to support it. Now, will you need all of this? Absolutely not. But you want to make sure that whatever the judge asks for or any claim that you make, you are able to support it with the proper documentation. Without it, they won't be able to use your statement. So evidence is very important. Make sure that you are prepared. I've come up with an acronym that I want you to think about. It's ACE. Very simple to remember. A stands for attire, meaning how you look. C for conduct, meaning the way you behave, and etiquette for what is proper ways to behave in a courtroom. So I want to start with attire. Most people think, you know, well, I'll go to court, I'll look okay, and I think I look okay. Jeans and a t-shirt are fine. But I want to mention to you firsthand, and that is judges, the first impression that they have of you is when you appear before them. And as you may know, first impressions are made within seconds of seeing you. So if you are sloppy, if you have tattoos all over your neck and they're very disparaging, that is not going to bode you well. Judges are relatively conservative, and I don't mean that politically. Let me say that again. Judges are conservative. I don't mean that politically. There are things that just don't fly with them. And it may be modern and cool and the hip, edgy thing now in this day and time, but for them, not so much. So you want to go to court as though you are prepared to go to court and that what you have to say has merit. So if you walk in a bathing suit and flip-flops, you don't have much credibility. Now, you may chuckle at that, but there are actually jurisdictions throughout the United States that have signs that say no flip-flops or bathing suits on the premises. They wouldn't have signs like that if people did not attempt to appear before a judge looking that way. I can tell you personally, I have observed judges and heard judges tell people, the case is dismissed for the day, go home, case will be rescheduled for another time when they can dress better. So proper attire is critical. It also, being dressed appropriately shows respect for the court and respect for the judge. So let's talk about, for women, what's appropriate. A dress suit. And when I say a dress or dress suit, I don't mean a sundress. If you are in a sundress, put a little bolero jacket or a jacket over it so that your shoulders are covered. A dress suit. And that can be a skirt, camisole, skirt and blouse, and a jacket. Again, something dressy. Doesn't have to look like you're going to a wedding, but business casual attire. You can wear slacks and a top, not jeans, but slacks and a top. Something, again, business attire, shirt button up or a sweater that's a higher collar. You don't want to have anything that's deep and showing a lot of cleavage. Something that is on the conservative side. If you have slacks, zip up, have a belt and shirt tucked in. Nothing sloppy, very pulled together. A pantsuit is appropriate, or just a skirt and a top. No clanging jewelry. And I know that's a tough one. I am one to wear lots of bracelets. It's not unusual sometimes for me to have a total of 20 bracelets clanging around. When I go to court, none. Maybe one bracelet that I know won't jangle. So no clanging bracelets. If you have any ink, and it's very fashionable, I get it, but if you have any tattoos on your neck, shoulder, arms, any place that a judge can see them, and if they are somewhat disparaging or could be to a judge, you may want to cover them. You can go to a pharmacy and get something called medical makeup that you can cover a tattoo. So what do I mean by a tattoo? So if you have a little bumblebee on your arm or on your wrist, maybe somebody's name, not a problem. Something around your ankle and your hose can cover it up, or it's just little flower or something, that's not too hateful. If you have anything that has any political or religious type of connotations to it, please cover them. If they are places like all around your neck and your face, all over your hands, you may want to cover them because that can distract the judge and that can give them a different opinion about you. I'm not saying it will, it just could. So when in doubt, err on the side of caution and just cover those possibly perceived questionable tattoos. No dangling earrings. I know you may love those earrings that are big and they have feathers and the whole thing. That's really cute. Wear it to the bar on a Friday night. Don't wear it to court. If you wear earrings, little button earrings, small hoops, a little drop, but nothing that is dangling or distracting. Please, no political or religious statements on clothing. None whatsoever. No campaigning for any politicians. No leaning to any political party. Nothing whatsoever. In fact, no writing on the shirt. And that means not even a university. You may love the fact that you went to Harvard. Just don't wear a Harvard sweatshirt to court or a t-shirt. So any writing, don't wear anything if it's on the clothing. Just don't do it. Now for shoes, no flip-flops or sneakers. Let's be honest. flip-flops, they're appropriate for the beach or going out about around town on a summer day, but not court, and surely no sneakers. Now, men, I'm not leaving you out. Obviously, the best option for court attire is a suit. But if you don't have a suit, slacks with a button-down shirt or polo shirt should be worn. And please, at all times, if you're wearing a suit, obviously you would wear a tie. If you are wearing slacks with a button-down shirt, please tuck in your shirt and wear a belt. Going to court with a nice pair of khaki slacks and then maybe a polo shirt or a long sleeve shirt with the tails hanging out is just sloppy and it's disrespectful. Take a couple seconds, tuck it in, wear a belt. As with women, no sandals, no flip-flops or sneakers. Come on, no flip-flops, you're not at the beach, and definitely no sneakers. As with women, also no tattoos on your face, your neck, especially if they're questionable. If you are making a political statement with tattoos on your face or your neck or down your arm, it's fantastic. Wear a long sleeve shirt and cover them with medical makeup. The judge may not mind them, but what if they do? That could possibly hurt your case. You always want to look favorable to the judge, and this is one way to do it. Cover up the tattoos if they're questionable. And again, no political or religious statements on clothing. And I mention it for women. I want to say it a little bit stronger for men because men have a tendency, and I've seen it more often in court, where they come in with a sweatshirt, a t-shirt, a hoodie, and they have all kinds of advertisements on it, or sometimes organizations they belong to, or political statements, and you just rock and roll bands, none of that. Just don't wear it. You want to go in with a clean slate, fresh slate, and look the part. Look as though you are professional, business attire, and you come to court and you show the court that you respect not only the court, but you respect the judge. I want to move on to the second letter in the acronym ACE, and that is conduct. Your conduct will have a huge bearing on the outcome of your case. I mention in the guidebook that a judge once told me personally that when people come before or came before her, 50% of her decision was predicated on the facts and what she heard, but the other, and this is very powerful, 50% of her rulings had to do with somebody's conduct. And when you think about it, you could see how that could be. Remember something. The judge reads your case before you come in. Sometimes they give 5 minutes to it. Sometimes they give 5 seconds to eyeball your case. So what impression do they have of you? Well, what you look like. Again, we just mentioned the first couple seconds. They get an idea of who you are by the way you look, but more importantly, how you behave. And I've heard people tell me, well, when I get in the courtroom, this is what I'm going to tell the judge. Let me start this with, you don't tell the judge anything. You answer the questions the judge asks of you. If the judge doesn't ask you questions and your attorney asks you questions, you answer your attorney. If you were at cross-examination and your spouse's attorney is asking you questions, you answer them appropriately. And you do so with court decorum, or what I call court conduct. Anything short of that, the judge will have a bad impression upon you. If your spouse is claiming you are crazy, you shoot off at the hip, they can't deal with you, you're unreasonable, and you behave that way in court, it's a slam dunk for their side. Some of these things on the list are common sense. Some of them you may not be familiar with. So let's go over some of those. Number one, never interrupt the judge. When the judge talks, you listen. The judge will give you an opportunity to speak. If you interrupt the judge and your spouse is claiming you never listen, You're rude. You've just proved that to be true by interrupting the judge. So don't interrupt the judge. Let them ask the question, and you do the answering when they've completed their sentence. Number two, we are so quick to answer a question, especially in court. We're really nervous, and you get a question thrown at you, and you just answer it. And then you go, oh, wait a minute, maybe that wasn't the right answer. And I understand that. Listen, I've spent a lot of time testifying in court. I know the desire to give an answer right away just is biting at us. And the reason is because we want to appear as though we know what we are talking about. So if we are asked a question by our spouse's attorney or our attorney or even the judge, we want to act like, I just heard that question. I know the answer and here it is. But sometimes we don't hear it properly, or we don't hear it the way we should be answering it. So my suggestion is, before you answer any question, make sure you understand what's being asked of you. If you don't understand a question, just don't make up an answer, because that will come back at you. So what I always think is the best option is to run that question in your mind twice before you answer it. So if the judge says, so Ms. Smith, did you pull your car out of the parking lot with the intention of crashing into your husband's car that afternoon you were picking your daughter up from school, as he said you were? Just don't jump out. No, I didn't do that. Hear that question once, twice in your head, and then you can say, no, Your Honor, that is not what happened. Do you see the difference? Hear that question in your mind twice, and then answer with a full sentence. Number three, and this is so important, address the judge as Your Honor. The judge is the decider of your case. And I often hear people tell me, well, you know, I'm going to tell the judge, and I go, stop. The judge can take away your freedom. The judge is the decider. The judge can do a whole heck of a lot of things that you aren't even aware of. Treat the judge with respect. Demonstrate that you have respect for the judge. Address them as Your Honor, yes, ma'am, or no, ma'am. Yes, sir, or no, sir. Anything short of that is disrespectful. And definitely don't answer with, huh? What? Yeah? Mm-mm. Show respect. Number four, do not volunteer any information beyond what you are asked. Too often people just, they want to give as much information as possible, and they just start rambling on. And then before you know it, they are deep into the weeds, into a conversation in a scenario that they, well, basically they've gone rogue. And this can hurt your case, because you may end up saying things that you have no idea what you are saying. Or you may hurt your credibility because you're just rambling on and on and on. So don't volunteer anything. Ms. Smith, did you pick the children up Tuesday, November 2nd, whatever year it is? You hear that question in your mind. Yes, Your Honor, I did. You don't have to go into, well, you see, Your Honor, what happened? Okay, so first of all, like, I need my job, and like, my boss doesn't really like me to take off early, but I did on this day because I knew that my daughter had to go to the orthodontist. And then stop. Mm-mm. No, don't go there. Hear the question. Answer the question. Don't volunteer any more information than what you are asked. Sometimes people, when they go that route, they will actually overshare to their detriment. So they may say something like, well, and yeah, and I took my daughter to the orthodontist, and then after that, I forgot to pick my son up for music, and he was like there for a really long time. And then they locked it up, and he was like outside waiting. And then fortunately I got there before it got really dark. Stop. Why would you even tell that story? And it sounds ludicrous when I repeat it, but I hear this all the time. Don't overshare. It could be to your detriment. Hear the question you are asked. Listen to the question. Repeat it in your mind. Answer the question short and sweet. Number five, if you make a mistake or you comment an error, fix it right away. If you don't, you could be viewed as being either deceptive or a liar, manipulative, all of the three. You don't want to go down that road. And oftentimes that happens with no ill intent, no malice. People start rambling on and they just, you know, they answer a question. They really didn't think about it. And they just answer anything. And then, oh my goodness, what did I just say? That's not true. Oh, but I'm not going to say anything. And then it snowballs. A couple minutes into the case, they realize, oh, what did I just say? But I didn't retract it at the time. And they say to the judge, well, no, see what I meant, I didn't mean. And then they're all tripped up. They start to stumble over their words and they don't seem credible. You should not get to this place if you follow the instructions I'm giving you thus far. Hear the question, answer it in your head or say it over in your head. Think of the answer and give an concise, short, sweet answer. You shouldn't have to worry about making mistakes or going rogue if you follow those instructions. Don't overshare. Don't give too much. If, though, you do make a mistake, catch yourself and correct it immediately. Number six, and that is listen, listen, listen. The more listening you do and the less talking, the better for your case. Listen to what is being said. Just don't start rambling. Number seven, and this is really important. If you seriously can't remember something, a simple, I don't recall, or if you only remember part of it, you can say, that's all I remember. Those two comments are sufficient. Don't make up information to fill up spaces. So for example, your ex claims that you charged up on a credit card, didn't pay it, and lied to him about how much you spent, and it went into arrears, and he didn't bring the bill. You didn't bring the bill because you didn't know it was going to be brought up. And you're standing there in court and you're like, no, well, that didn't happen. No, Your Honor, no, the credit card, no, that didn't happen. And then you get all flustered and you really don't even remember. You don't even know what he's talking about. A simple, Your Honor, I don't recall that. Or you can say, I know there was a credit card and there was some spending. I wasn't prepared for that today. I didn't know this would be addressed. I can't answer the question adequately today. A judge appreciates that. You're honest. You don't recall or you don't remember the circumstances of something that you were not prepared to answer. That is much better than creating some monumental story that means nothing to anyone except for you. And then you've gone so far out into the weeds with the story that if you are then asked particular questions, and you will be by your spouse's attorney, you will have no idea what you're answering because you really don't even know what's going on because you're just rambling in response to a question that makes you feel uncomfortable or you don't remember. So again, a simple, I don't recall, or I don't really remember those circumstances is sufficient. If it becomes paramount to the case, the judge will give you ample time to maybe send a statement or a letter, or your attorney write a letter, or provide the evidence that they're asking for at a later date. Just don't make it up while you are there. Number eight, and this is really important. I will say it twice. Do not lose your temper. I'm going to say it again. Do not lose your temper. And I know that sounds like, well, of course I'm not going to lose my temper. I'm going to court. What do you think I'm going to do? Lose my temper in court? You could. If you've never been in court, your ex comes in, or your soon-to-be ex, your spouse who's going to become your ex in a matter of minutes, maybe a few hours. They're standing over there and they are claiming you lied and you cheated and you did all these things and they paint you out to be a terrible person. It takes a whole lot of energy to keep your mouth shut on that one. It really does. I mean, here they're basically degrading you in front of a judge. They got their attorney over there doing it. Their attorney may be doing it for them. Don't open your mouth. Don't lose your temper. Because here's what I've seen frequently. One spouse is spewing all kinds of venom about one, the other spouse, and then the other spouse leans over, looks beyond both counsel who are standing there. You're a liar. You are a liar. I can't believe you're saying this. Your Honor, this is how it is. He's such a liar. Or, Your Honor, this is why I can't stand her. She's lying. She's a cheat. Whoa, stop. Nope. Because what that does is reduce your credibility. If your spouse comes to court and claims that you're unreasonable, every time they come to pick up the children, you create a scene, you're not reasonable with visitation. That's basically an opinion. There's no fact behind that statement. And then you lose your temper. Once you lose your temper, that statement becomes fact. And by the way, you may have never done anything that your spouse is claiming. You may have been the calmest person on the face of the planet, never opened your mouth, never said a disparaging thing. You lost your temper in court. All of that goes out the window. Now the judge thinks you're a loose cannon. So do not lose your temper. Bite your tongue. And I know that's tough. I've been divorced. I've been in court. I've had to testify in court. I know how hard it is to hold back those words, especially when you see the other side lying through their teeth. Don't lose your temper. You will have your opportunity. And that brings me to number 9. Stay calm. Maybe make an appointment with a massage therapist or a yoga class the day after your trial or your hearing. Or mediation, whatever it's called, whatever it is, your day in court, because your shoulders may be up around your ears, your back may be tense, your chest tight. I get it. It's very hard to stay calm in an emotionally charged situation. And it's just that. Divorce is very emotionally charged. Number 10, no eye rolling or snide facial remarks. Judges, watch what you do. Remember, when they come into the courtroom, they are looking down at you and your spouse and your counsel. They may have experiences with the former counsels. They may already have an opinion about you just based on your attorney. Who knows? They've read your file. Again, some attorneys look at those files the day before the hearing and they know a whole lot about it. Others eyeball it in the morning. If you have your own court-appointed attorney, they will have spent more time on it and read it more extensively. It doesn't matter what they've read. They want to come into this courtroom with a clean slate. Hear your side, hear your spouse's side, hear both of your counsel's side, hear the examination, cross-examination. They want to have a big picture before a ruling is made. Period. If you start eye-rolling or make snide facial remarks or remarks under your breath, the judge will see that and that will reduce your credibility. So keep your face as blank as you possibly can. And I know that's tough. It's tough to not cry. It's tough to not get emotional. And you don't want to seem as though you are just a hard piece of rock. You don't want to come off that way. You want to come off where this is a sad, solemn process. It's not easy for you. But at the same time, you are not going to roll your eyes and have this kind of arrogance, haughty way to you. The judge will pick up on that, and that will not bode you well. Number 11, when you address a judge, you stand. Now, typically how it works is the bailiff will tell everybody to rise and to sit. But if for any reason you are seated during the hearing, sometimes the judge will have everybody sit down and he or she will chat. But if the judge addresses you, you stand up. Doesn't matter where you are. The minute the judge addresses you, you stand up and you answer. And if you were seated before that, you can then sit down, or you can say, "Your Honor, may I now sit down?" But they speak to you, you stand up. Number 12, make eye contact when the judge addresses you directly. Don't look at the floor. Don't look at the walls. Don't roll your eyes around the room. You look directly at the judge. Judges are really big on eye contact. Now, that doesn't mean leer at the judge, but you look at the judge when you are spoken to. Number 13, and this is a big one. Do not use bad or derogatory language. Okay? Sounds simple, doesn't it? I can't tell you how many times I've been in court and I've heard people start cussing out their spouse right in front of the judge. Or they tell the judge a story and they start with, "You know what? Like, I'm sick of her fucking shit." What? What? Now, excuse my language for any of you who may be offended by what I've just said, but take my word for it. I've heard it. You think a judge likes that? Especially if the wife or other partner claims he or she's always disrespectful and uses bad language, and then that happens and they do it. Well, there you go. Walked right into it. So no bad language. Even if you swear like a sailor in your everyday life, put a lid on it when you go to court. No bad language. And lastly, as far as courtroom conduct is concerned, be polite and speak clearly. If a judge speaks to you and asks you about a certain event, an answer such as, "Well, I was trying to pick my daughter up from school and I know he was late." You don't want a judge to say, "Ms. Smith, please speak up." You say, "Your Honor," and then you proceed with answering the question. Speak politely and clearly. So now that we've covered the conduct and how you should behave in a courtroom, I want to address etiquette, because there is courtroom etiquette. There's a way to behave in court. It's sort of like, you know, church etiquette or synagogue or mosque etiquette. You know how to behave in a hospital, in a classroom. It would not occur to you to sit in a classroom and in the middle just jump up and dance. Okay? And so you wouldn't do this in a courtroom either. But there are some things that I want to go over with you just so you know when you go to court. When you get a court date, let's say, for example, you have a hearing on a Thursday at 9:30 in the morning. I don't want to bust your bubble, but what that means is you are on the morning docket. What does that mean? That means that you will walk into a courtroom full of people at 9:30 in the morning. Typically, there are two dockets, one in the morning and one after lunch. So when you come in at 9:30 in the morning, and if you have a 9:30 hearing, you will have to get there about a half an hour before time, and we will talk about that in a couple minutes. That means you may get lucky and be the only case that morning. And sometimes for really big, lengthy, long, complex cases, a docket will be cleared and just one case will be heard. It's more reasonable to think that you will walk into a courtroom and there's tons of cases going on that day. Depending on whether you're in a higher court or a lower court, you could walk in there and there's traffic accidents and there's divorces and there's land disputes, who knows? But there may be a plethora of cases and many litigants in the courtroom. You may get lucky and be the first case. 9:30, you're out in an hour. That's special. That's wonderful. Or there may be 10 people in there and you may be the ninth case. So you may sit there and listen to other cases. So there is an etiquette, whether you are the first case that's tried or the last one in that docket. So let me go over a few of these nuts and bolts for you so that you understand how to behave while you are sitting there. It's obvious that you don't blurt anything out at any time. Keep in mind that all hearings are taped or recorded. Some courtrooms actually have a court stenographer that speaks into an item that looks like a little cup. and just repeats everything that's going on, and it gets recorded into a recording device. Most courts now have a little sign with a little person character on it, and the judge will say, when I turn on the recording, it will turn a color. Most of the times it's blue, sometimes it's green. Who knows? The color doesn't matter. What does matter is when that color appears, the judge says, now everything is being recorded. Everything that's going on in the courtroom does get recorded. And you can all, just as an aside, you can always get transcripts of your hearing and or trial. There sometimes is a fee for it. Sometimes it's free. It depends on the jurisdiction, your court. But anything that goes on in that courtroom can be purchased. That said, you want to be careful about what you say. So blurting things out in the middle of your hearing or anybody else's is totally inappropriate. Number one, there's no food or drink permitted in a courtroom. Nowhere in the courtroom. If you have a bagged lunch or snacks in your handbag or in your briefcase, keep them tucked away. You don't pull out a granola bar or a bag of chips and start eating during court. If your blood sugar is getting really low and there's a hearing going on and you know you are not going to be called up for another 10 or 15 minutes, you can duck out of the courtroom, go into the lobby, have your granola bar, throw the trash away, and then come back. Don't start crinkling it around. The judge will hear it and seek you out and call you out on it. So don't do it. Typically in courtrooms, there will be signs that say no food or drink in the courtroom. But if not, just know you don't eat or drink in a courtroom. Number two, no gum chewing. If you have gum in your mouth, don't chew it and crack it loudly, and definitely don't blow bubbles. Even if you want a mint or a piece of gum during the hearing, and let's say it's Tic Tacs or Mentos or something like that that clang around in a little container, step out of the courtroom and do it in the lobby. Don't start crinkling or clanging around mints or gum during any of the hearings. Number three, and that is no cell phone use. Typically, there are signs in the courtrooms now that state that there is not to be any cell phone use. And either the judge or the bailiff or the court stenographer will tell everybody in the courtroom not to have their cell phones on. But wow, can't tell you how many times I've heard cell phones go off. You don't want that to happen. Silence them and don't answer. And by the way, that doesn't mean silence them for phone calls and play games on the phone and check your emails. No, You're not on the internet. You put the cell phone away. The last thing you want is for a judge to call you on it, or worse yet, have a bailiff take it away from you. Number four, and this is important, be on time. If you have a hearing that is 9 o'clock, and my rule of thumb is get there at 8, yeah, you're going to have to sit around the lobby. So what? Because the last thing you want to do is start running late. I can guarantee you, if you're running late, you will find it miserable to find a place to park. You know, Murphy's Law will kick in. Drive around for 10, 15 minutes looking for a place to park where the parking garage will be full. Something will come up to make you later than you already are. If it's raining, inclement weather, if you live in an area where there's snow or it's a windy day, please leave on early so that you are on time. It's much better that you get there an hour early and just chill, sit quietly in the lobby versus scurrying in last minute, your hair all shoveled, things falling out of your handbag or briefcase. You just don't want to look all disheveled. Also, so you know, if for any reason you run into unforeseen circumstances, there is a horrendous car accident, traffic is gridlocked, you can't get off, this is the only way you can get to the courthouse, this is the one and only route, traffic is terrible. In your defense, almost everybody in the courthouse will know this is going on because you will not be the only person impacted, but you still call the court, get a hold of a clerk, say, to let her know what time your docket is, your name, your case number, and where you are. Depending on when you can get there, will determine what the judge's decision will be. If there has been a sinkhole and it looks like you wouldn't be able to get there for 3 hours and half of the lawyers can't get there and some of the judges are behind, they will postpone that hearing or trial. If it's inclement weather or if you had a car accident, heaven forbid, any circumstances that would waylay you from being there on time, you need to contact the courts. You ask for a clerk, you give them your name and your case number and what time you are scheduled. They have everything there on file. Some courthouses actually have screens for each hearing room. They can find out where you are supposed to be and get that information to the judge. Now, if you have an attorney, which you should, then by all means, if you have an attorney, which you should, by all means, contact your attorney and let them know you are running late and why. Now, the reason I tell you this is because when you go to court, they do something called roll call. And roll call means the judge and or the clerk will do roll call, just like you're in school. They will announce the case number and the plaintiff, the defendant, which are the two parties. The person who sued for divorce will be the plaintiff or complainant. And the person who has been sued will be the defendant. It really doesn't matter the titles as far as divorce is concerned. That matters a little bit more when you have actual civil cases, when there's contract disputes, and definitely when there are criminal cases. But divorce, it's a little more relaxed, but you are both the litigants. And so when they do roll call, they will call your names and they will also call the names of the attorney. You do not want roll call to take place and you are nowhere to be found, because one of two things can happen. Either the judge can say, okay, well, wait, we'll give it a few more minutes if you are lucky. If you are not lucky, there will be a failure to appear on your part. And you may lose your day in court. So if you are running late for any reason, contact the court. Contact your attorney, but more importantly, just give yourself extra time. There's no reason to be late. This is your big day. This is the day that you are getting divorced. You've known about this. You didn't get the notice a day ago. You've known about this. So you should have the children situated. You should be there on time. Now, we all know things happen, but please, do everything you possibly can to be in court on time. Think of ACE. ACE, court attire, conduct, and etiquette. Follow these steps and procedures, and you will have an uneventful divorce, at least on your side.